because he wanted to see London, but because he'd had many beatings from my husband as well as me, and he needed to get out of the house. So at 17 and a half, he went to live in London, and that was a hard thing for me to let him go, but I felt it was better for him. He didn't earn a lot of money, and I couldn't help him financially. I didn't have any money. And when I would question him about where was he staying and how was he coping, he would say, "I'm all right, Mom, really, I'm all right. Don't you worry about me." But one Sunday he called me and he was crying. And he said, "Mom, I didn't tell you, but this house I live in is horrible. It's dirty and there are so many people live in it and I've only got a little room. And it's so miserable that I'm out walking the streets today. And I haven't any money and I haven't eaten. And I don't know what to do." Well, I was crying, and I said, "Oh, David, just come home. Just come home, son. I will find a fare somewhere to bring you home." And he said, "Mom, you know that that's not the answer. That's not the answer either. Just pray for me, Mom." So I said, "Okay." And I went off the phone, and I was crying. And then I asked God for some angel messages. The angel message came was that this was not my son, this was God's son. And that God loved him wherever he was. There was not more good in my home in Belfast than there was right where he was. These lovely angel thoughts kept flowing, that all of God's goodness and his superabundance was there and would meet his every need, whatever his need was for. Because he said he was lonely, hadn't made many friends, and whatever his need was for, whether it was for companionship or money or a place to live, whatever it was, those legions of angels were with him. And I went over the 91st Psalm, "He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty." And I knew that's where he was dwelling. He wasn't a mortal dwelling in a horrible place or in a strange city. He was dwelling in the secret place of the Most High, which was the kingdom of heaven. He was right there, and I could put him there and know that these legions of angels were taking care of him just right where he was. That evening, he called me back. He said, "Mom, you'll never believe what happened. I came out of that telephone kiosk. I saw a little shop. It had notices in the window. And I read one, and it said that a young man wanted another young man to share a house with him. I got the address. I went round to this house. It's a really nice house. It's on the River Thames. This young man was an engineer. And he and David seemed to get on very well together. And they talked about the duties in the house, what they should do. And David liked cooking. The other young man didn't. He said he would do the housework. And he told David he could move in that night or the next day. And David moved in the next day. And he told me there was a tennis club just 3 doors away. He was able to join this tennis club. He made many, many new friends. And as a housewarming party, I gave him a gift subscription to the Monitor. And he told me on the day that it arrived, he called me up to thank me. And he said, when it fell through the letterbox, "What are you doing, Arnold? Saying a prayer?" He told me that on the day that the first Monitor arrived, it fell through the door, and this young man that he shared the house with picked it up, and he said, "Is that the Christian Science Monitor?" And David said, "Yes." He said, "Well, how did you get that?" And David said, "Well, all my family are Christian Scientists." And this young man said, "I can't believe this." He said, "The girl I'm engaged to is a Christian Scientist, and I have started going to her church." And this whole thing worked out so perfectly. He lived there quite a while with this young man until they both married. That was another proof to me that God's angels are always in control, but we have to know it. And you know, we have to know that that's true in our church as well. So many of us are concerned about the things that have been happening in our church and in our movement. But if we become concerned, we're not trusting God's angels. If you think about the angels and what Mrs. Eddy says angels are, then we have to know that he that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High, that is our church. Church is a spiritual idea, a divine idea. We have to know that our church is in the secret place of the Most High, and so is every member without exception. We have to put every member into this secret place of the Most High. When we do that, we'll stop being frightened. We stop being upset. We stop being angry. And we will see the way to solve our problems when we're calm and at peace, not when we're angry. That doesn't solve anything. You know this poem that I just read to you? I'll read it to you again because I want you to think about letting the angels tell them. Angels, God's thoughts passing to man, spiritual intuitions pure and perfect, the inspiration of goodness, purity, and immortality, counteracting all evil, sensuality, and mortality. Isaiah of old said, "Hear now, behold, a virgin conceiving shall bear a son." Indeed, it would be as God's prophet foretold. But who would tell Mary, the favored one? Let Gabriel, let the angel tell Mary, the virgin of the highest will. But who would tell Joseph and make him believe that here was a virgin who could so conceive? The wise virgin Mary, let an angel tell him. Let an angel tarry, or more surely we find, does one believe angels than words from mankind? Who was there to go out at night time and tell the shepherds who wandered high up on the hill that the Savior was born? It was a bright angel who brought them good tidings of joy for all people. Practicing Christians prepared to convey the Christ, understanding that's with us today, proclaim the glad tidings. And should one refuse to hear healing truths from lips of men, let the angels tell them. Can't we trust those angels to tell every member what they need to know? We have to do it. We have to do it for the cause of Christian science. Mrs. Eddy said about the Mother Church, "This building begun will go up, and no one can suffer from it, for no one can resist the power that is behind it. And against this church temple, the gates of hell shall not prevail." Our leader said those words. She meant them, and she knew what she was talking about. As I've said in other talks, our church is us. C-H-U-R-C-H. You are church in action. And what we have to concentrate on is better healing. Better healing. We have to look for opportunities to heal. How many non-scientists have you healed this week? Put up your hand if you healed one. How about this month? Oh, there's a hand up. That's encouraging. A hand up. Out of all these people, one hand up. How many of you healed this year? Good. You see, this is what we have to be doing. You might say, I don't know anybody to heal. Tell me this. Do you know anybody that doesn't need healed of something? Healed of fear? Fear of flying? Fear of anything? Fear of poverty? Fear of disease? Fear of old age? Fear of death? Do you know anybody that doesn't need that? Forget about trying to get the people to come to our church and be Christian scientists. Forget about it.